ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
On ABC Radio, you're with Rod Quinn. It is time to talk health and fitness with Professor Gordon Lynch from the University of Melbourne. Gordon, good morning.
Good morning, Rod.
You know, a lot of people ask you, and not a lot of people ask me, what are the benefits of exercising regularly? And by regularly, I suppose we're talking about every day or maybe five times a week. How do we track whether it's doing us any good? And how much do we actually have to do to get any kind of benefit? And you want to talk about that this morning.
I do. And I think as an incentive as to why we would want to exercise regularly is understanding, well, what should I get out of it? What should I, how should I be responding? And you know, I think if you enjoy watching sports, you know, you often ask yourself, or I certainly do, does watching the elite athletes inspire you to get out there and get active yourself, or is it a disincentive? You know, does it all look a little bit too hard? But for many people, trying to gain fitness, it's pretty challenging. But I think it's about having reasonable expectations, and having those expectations that are realistic. I think then you can sort of invest the time that's going to, you know, give you the return on that time and effort. So an example I often use, it's fictitious, but it sets up a scene. Sue, who's in her early 60s, she's frustrated by her fitness, and she still gets very puffed when she walks up hills, and that's despite exercising seriously for the last 3 years, for example. Once she's reached the top of the hill, she recovers very quickly, and so she was a bit concerned, so she had a test by a cardiologist who told her that training doesn't work for some people and that maybe her expectations are too high. And I thought, well, is that true? And there may be an element of truth to it. You know, the expectation, I think, is that shouldn't we all improve with regular training? And I think we can. I think from a general health and fitness standpoint, if we're getting more active, then we should, if we set aside that time, even if we're always very busy, but if we can set aside that time within our busy lives to prioritize exercise, then we should get a good return on that investment. But I think it's also about being realistic about what to expect from exercise and how we might respond to different types of activity. So that's the basis of what I wanted to talk about today. And, you know, certainly the response to exercise can be different for different people.
And that's an important thing, is that you might exercise, you know, with a partner or friends or whatever, or you might do it by yourself, and you find that you're not getting the same response that others are, that they can go longer and further than you can, and you're still puffing or you're still having to stop or whatever. You know, is it just as simple as the fact that we're all different that explains why some people get more out of it than others?
I think in a general sense, that's actually essentially true. But there are a few reasons to explain why it's the case. And you can use the example at the extreme levels of athletic performance, considering marathon runners versus sprinters, for example. So the best marathon athletes, they look very different to the best sprinters in terms of their muscle composition, not just the size of the muscles, but the composition, the makeup of the muscles. The marathon runners, if you think about what they have to do, they've got to perform this continuous activity for hours on end. So the muscles are actually smaller, they're less bulky, they've got more slow twitch fibers, which are biologically designed to work for long periods without fatigue. The sprinters, if you look at the extreme opposite, they need to perform short, explosive bursts of activity, and their muscles are generally larger, and they're composed predominantly of what we call fast twitch muscle fibers that are biologically designed to produce very fast contractions. But those muscle fibers actually fatigue very quickly. And that's the reason why you can't sustain a high intensity activity for very long, because they fatigue. So the muscle composition between all of us will vary. So you say that, you mentioned about this different response between them. That's because our muscle composition will vary. Some people have more slow muscle fibers. Others are more endowed with more fast muscle fibers. And there are other factors that can influence, you know, the biomechanics of the exercise. Ultimately, it's the skill and the performance of different tasks, of course, that separate people in those performances. But we tend to perform better in certain activities depending upon what muscle composition we have. So some will be better suited as sprinters, others better suited for endurance activities. If you're like me, right, then you're probably somewhere in the middle and you're unlikely to set the world on fire with any activity whatsoever. But it doesn't mean that with training you can't improve your performance in either of those activities. But realistically, you're never going to be a champion sprinter if you're genetically predisposed for more endurance activities, and you're never going to be a champion marathoner if you're genetically endowed to perform superiorly in short-term sprint activity. So I think it's just important to know your limits, not to overexert yourself in the wrong direction because, you know, you're susceptible to injury. And I gave the case, that fictitious case of Sue, who's huffing and puffing a bit when she gets to the top of the hill, but she recovers very quickly. So to me, that says her fitness isn't too bad at all because it's the recovery from that event which is actually a measure of fitness as well. Unfit people generally huff and puff even when they're performing only moderately taxing tasks, and they don't recover as quickly like Sue. So one explanation, maybe she's more of a sprinter than an endurance person, and she huffs and puffs, but her ability to recover means she's not doing too badly. So it puts a more realistic spin on what we should expect from that investment in activity.
But how do we know whether it's slow twitch or fast twitch fibers, or whether we are genetically predisposed for marathon rather than sprint? And when we say marathon, we don't mean go out and run a marathon, but it just might mean that your exercise style or the exercises that you do are not going to be in short bursts, but maybe over a longer period. You might be better off at swimming rather than running. You might be better off at lifting weights rather than aerobic exercises. How do you even know without trying everything and then finding out what does or doesn't work? Because that might take years to do that. And you don't want to waste your time doing the wrong exercise.
No, but I think the question is you're asking, how will you know? Unless you're taking samples of muscle from people, which is, it's an invasive procedure. You can take needle biopsies and you take a certain sample and that can be done. But for the most part, we're not going to be able to do that. And I think it's, generally speaking, you don't have to be superior at everything, but you can do a bit of endurance activity, you can do a bit of strength training, and you can still gain benefits in both. Doesn't mean you're going to be a world champion bodybuilder or world champion marathon runner or whatever, but the idea is that you're still investing in that exercise or different types of exercise to produce different benefits for your health. So when you think about, you know, Sue's case, she had a cardiologist check, which I think was a very important thing, but generally everyone should consider, if you're feeling breathless or experiencing sort of chest pain during exertion, then you should be checked with it by your GP or your heart specialist, whatever, just to make sure that there's nothing wrong there. If there's an underlying problem with your circulation and blood flow, that could be a factor which could be affecting your performance. You know, a blockage that's restricting delivery of oxygen to working muscles, that's going to be an impediment, such as, you know, it could be lung function that could be affected as well. It could be an ex-smoker or things like that which could be impairing performance. But there could be reasons for that, but I think you need to get those checked. As we get older, naturally, our aerobic capacity, our muscle mass in particular, starts to decline. So we need to think about ways sensibly to try and address that. And we often do that on this show in a pretty decent way. Some medications can affect your performance as well. So some drugs that are designed to keep the heart in rhythm or perhaps reduce blood pressure that saves lives, they actually may have a side effect of making exercise a little bit more difficult. And you should discuss that with your doctor if you're experiencing that as well. These are issues that have to be discussed. Your health specialist can assess where you are. If you have concerns, they may have exercises they can advise you about what's suitable for you and what might not be suitable. So it's all right for someone to say, you should be doing this, you should be doing that. But you may not be able to do that, and so you need to get that checked. Usually most health specialists will encourage you to keep active, but it's always done in accordance with their particular recommendations.
All right, Gordon Lynch talking health and fitness this morning. So you've checked all those things. Maybe you've talked to an expert. Maybe you've talked to somebody at the local gym. You might get some ideas there. What else do you need to look into?
The things that you should start with is your goals. You know, I mean, are you following a program to improve your aerobic fitness? So it could be if you're walking or if you're riding a bike or you're swimming and so on for your heart and lungs, the health of your heart and lungs. Are you trying to gain muscle strength if you're by following a resistance exercise program? Are you trying to lose weight? Are you trying to train for a specific sport? The sorts of exercises you're going to perform will be very specific to those goals. You can't expect that, you know, going and following a particular program which is going to produce one outcome is going to produce benefits for all the other outcomes. It doesn't work that way. But once you've had the all clear to exercise from your GP or your specialist, the encouraging news I think for most people is, especially if you're new to exercise, is that regular training should lead to noticeable changes within a few weeks. Naturally, if you're exercising as part of a weight loss program, it's going to take a bit longer because you need to focus on the food intake side of the question. But even after just a few weeks of regular physical activity, you should feel somewhat more rested, you should be more alert, you're thinking more clearly, generally your mood should be improved. There was a study which came out very recently about just exercising a few sessions per week could improve insomnia in some people as well, so that could be something which could be something to consider. You know, if you're lifting weights to improve your strength, your muscle health, then you might notice that your clothes fit slightly differently, even though you mightn't have lost any weight. So you shouldn't just rely on the scales to tell you the full story about your investment of exercise, because the adaptations can be very specific to the type of intervention we're giving the body.
All right. How long do you reckon it might be before somebody who's not an expert starts to see measurable results? And how do you measure those results?
I think if you're making that investment of time and effort, then I think just a few weeks of if you're consistent with your training, you should start to experience those things I mentioned about, you know, the rest. You work hard, but you also your rest that affects your sleep patterns. So you should be improving your sleep in terms of your alertness and your ability to think clearly. Mood should be improved. Those sorts of things. Each exercise and your investment in that exercise will take some time for the body to respond because you're challenging the body. But I think the very encouraging news, especially if you're new to exercise, is that it doesn't take very long to start to feel the difference. And I think that's a real incentive. And it sort of feeds on itself in terms of you wanting to do more exercise because of how you're feeling. And I think if you get into that regular pattern, then that's going to be the key. It's the regular pattern of exercising, resting, and then going through that and then managing the challenges of everyday life.
This is also something that you're looking at long term, isn't it? That you need to know what you're doing. You need to know how long you're going to be doing this. You need to know what you actually want out of it. Do you want to be able to climb stairs without being out of breath? That's pretty straightforward. But if you want to be able to be fit and healthy into your later life, that's a different thing, isn't it?
It is. And so, again, that comes back to this management of your expectations. To gain the most benefits, I mentioned about this consistency with training. You have to be consistent with the training, but you can't keep doing the same thing over and over. You have to keep your exercise program sufficiently challenging so you can modify the number of sessions you perform each week. You can add or reduce the number of exercises, the number of laps that you might walk or you swim or run in each session, or how intensely you perform the exercise without necessarily changing the duration or the volume. You know, you can tweak different aspects of your program to keep it effective, but most importantly, it's about keeping it interesting. So the idea is that your body is responding, but just by those little minor tweaks here and there, that's going to be how the body responds. Most of us aren't training for the Olympics, but I think there are still plenty of good reasons to take it seriously. And so my advice is just keep your training goals realistic and achievable. Follow a routine that's tailored to those particular goals. And I think if you can do that, then you can be confident that, you know, you will reap the rewards of better health and fitness. And if you're new to exercise, you'll start to get them sooner than you realize.
Not all of us are training for the Olympics, as you mentioned, Gordon, but some of us are. Brisbane, it's not that far away. It's only 8 years away. You know, people could aim for that Olympic Games. They could take up marathon running and in 8 years' time be the best marathoner in the world.
Is that you and I, Rod?
No. I certainly plan to watch the Olympics on TV. I'm in training for that right now, Gordon.
I knew you might say something like that, but I think if, you know, if we can just do a bit of that regular training, get consistent with it, we'll all benefit from it, Rod.
All right. Gordon, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Rod.
Gordon Lynch, Health and Fitness.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.